Number one fear of all human beings, public speaking, flat out. Number three is death. And public speaking beats death by a landslide.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And, perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Tim Hart. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Tim. One, the first half of his career, he did advertising for seven automobile brands comprised of American, Japanese, German, and Korean car companies. He's one of a few advertising executives to work on that many diverse automotive brands. He was the CEO of two major U.S. advertising agencies for 14 years. Second fact about Tim, as the founder and president of Leading CEO for the past 20 years, Tim has trained thousands of executives in presentation skills from a wide variety of industries, including consumer products, tech, pharmaceutical, automotive, media, finance, and entertainment. Additionally, he specializes in executive coaching for C-level individuals with a focus on CEOs. He works with clients all over the world. And the third fact about Tim, he has a passion for art and is a collector of contemporary paintings and sculpture from California artists. Oh, and a bonus fact, he is the co-author of Out Loud, How Public Speaking Can Change Your Life and Your World. Tim Hart, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Great to see you and be talking with you. And there you are in sunny California, at least sunny some days.
Some days, sometimes, yes, right now.
Tim, when you work with CEOs, what tend to be their biggest obstacles? What's holding them back? And is there a change you need to get them past before they actually start to improve? What's their mindset like? And I know there's a few questions there.
Yeah, there are. But the thing about the mindset with CEOs, it's interesting because you would think going into this that they're all good presenters. And some of them are. But I'm surprised sometimes that some of them aren't. They don't have the ability. And they're no different than anybody else. But what I find is at the CEO level, these are the nicest people in the world when you're working with them. It's great. I mean, that's a phenomenal thing. So that's been a lot of fun. And I've worked with some people. For example, I have a client who is CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world. And the thing with what happened with that and the story about that is this, he wanted no one to know that he's working with me. So this became this top secret thing. And they kind of snuck me into the building. And yet with him, I probably had the best time because we opened up in the very beginning. Talk about stories. I told him a story that I've never told anyone. And he told me the same thing, a story that he had never told anyone. From that point on, we were bonded. And that's important. You know, and whenever I work with those with that level, I need to bond with them on certain levels too. And for me, which has been great, is that because I was a CEO, what I will tell them up front is there's nothing you can throw at me that I haven't done. So let's get that out of the way. And we do. And then after that, it's really a major experience for them. And the learning that they go through is interesting because it happens so fast. They're all such quick learners and they just absorb all of this right away. And it's fun to watch them grow. So that's what happens with CEOs.
Now, that's interesting, that exchange of secret stories helped you bond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And is that a technique that can go beyond just that coaching situation? Can that go between the CEO and their audience?
Okay, your question is, can it go between the CEO and the audience that they have? Absolutely. Because once they understand the mechanism of opening up like that and being very open and honest, that's another thing. People don't let people in sometimes. But when they do, it changes everything because it personalizes them to everyone and people can relate. So I really encourage them to do that, to open up and tell their stories.
And are the stories about personal failure, struggle, flaws?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually it's just that. It's failures, flaws, all those things. Or it's an experience that they've had that is so meaningful to them and so emotional for them. Once I get to that point, when I can see the emotion that they have, that's when we make all the breakthroughs. I start it and it's sort of organic what happens. If I tell my story, they tell their story. And so that's good. But they see, even in meetings when I'm doing a program where the CEO is in the room with the other people that are there and they're being part of the training, they just become anybody in the room. I don't treat them any differently than all the people that are in the room. So that's really an important thing. And that's where they learn a lot from that experience.
And I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard of this too, this illness that some CEOs have called the imposter syndrome.
Of course.
Have you run into that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a lot of people. But it's a big issue with the idea that with CEOs too. We all do this. Imposter syndrome is, am I really qualified to be this person? And we all feel that. But I think with a CEO, once they get to that point, they have to lose that. They have to lose the idea of the imposter syndrome. But they're well aware of it. You know, say, how did I become this person where I'm running the biggest company in the world? I mean, am I qualified for that? And once they get past that, it's good. But it's always there to a point. But you try to push it away so you don't worry about it.
And I suppose it's helpful to examine oneself but with some self-thought, but it's destructive to be constantly flogging oneself. I'm bad, I'm bad.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll tell you one of the key things that I do, and this is kind of if there's a secret sauce in terms of what I do, anytime I do any training, I ask everybody to give the person who's speaking feedback. But I ask them to tell them what they liked about it. I never ask them to criticize anybody. And so you're getting positive feedback from everybody in the room, which is great. And then that's all done. If I see something that I want to change, I'll just go in and change it. And it's very different. So they get the positive feedback. And then the way I handle it is, all right, first thing I say to all of them, can I work with you on this? I have to get their permission. And then they say, yes. No one's ever said no to me, by the way. And so they say, yes. And then I'll go in there and work with them on specific things that I think they need to learn and change. And they do. It's fast how people change when you have that kind of one-on-one exchange. So, and they change right in front of everybody. So it's good.
What has been some of the biggest surprises for you with working with CEOs?
I guess the surprises are like everybody else. You know, they're not special. They're not different. And they're just down-to-earth people, no matter who they are. Now, they don't think of themselves as being somebody above, everybody else in the organization. And those are the really great CEOs. I mean, there's different types of CEOs, but those CEOs that really feel they're part of the organization, that they're the head of the I always tell people, the number one thing that a CEO has to do is control the culture of the company. They're responsible for the culture of the company. And if you don't have a CEO who actually creates the culture, you're going to have a culture anyway. And it's going to come from the bottom up. And if you have it coming from the bottom up, it's chaos. And so I spend a lot of time talking to them about their responsibility to create the culture. And then once they understand that, it helps. But the way they treat people, the way they treat and talk to other people in the company, that's critical to being a CEO.
And what aspect of communication helps to set and reinforce the culture?
What aspect of communication helps to reinforce? I think, George, from this perspective, you want the CEO to be available and approachable. That's really important. I remember one time, actually, when I was a CEO, and I've told other CEOs this too, if something's going on, I needed to get something Xeroxed, I would go do it myself. And when you see the CEO go and do something like that, it really makes you approachable. And I've told a lot of the CEOs, George, if you want to relate to your people, don't give them things and then it's above. I mean, there's no reason on earth why my assistant has to go do it all. I can do it myself. I have this phrase that I'll tell the people, my hands are not painted on. I can go do whatever I want to do. So it just works that way. And once the CEOs realize that, it makes them more human, much more approachable. And that's what you want in a CEO. You want them to be approachable. And that's kind of the communication style that I encourage with them. I'm all about conversation. When you're presenting, especially I'll tell the CEOs this, it's not about you. The first thing about presentations and communications when you're talking to people, it's not about you. It's about the audience. But we make it about ourselves. You know, how do I look? How do I feel? All these things. And that really taints the whole process. So once you make it a conversation, people relax. I mean, I can have a conversation with 3,000 people and I've done it, or I can have one with 5 people. It doesn't matter. The only difference is the size of the room. But once you get past that head thing, you got to get out of your head, by the way, when you're doing major presentations, because it's not about you. So just get out of your own head and remember, you're here to really convince the audience and teach them whatever it is you want to teach them or share information with them. And that's basically the whole style of presentations that I totally advocate, is making it conversational.
How does one have a conversation with 1,000 people?
Okay. Two things. One, you said, how did you have a conversation with 1,000 people? First of all, it's 1,000 people. The main thing is that you don't talk to the entire 1,000 people. What you do, and this, what I've done, is I will divide the room into sections in my head. Okay, there's 3 sections here, 3 sections here, 3 sections here, 3 sections here. And what I do is I will have eye contact with each one of those sections while I'm talking, when I'm conversing. But I'll pick a different person in each section every time I'm talking to that group. And what happens, this is just it's a law of some kind of retraction, but if I'm talking to you and you're in the middle of one of those groups, it feels like I'm talking to 20 people. 20 people around them will swear that I looked right at them. It has that multiplication effect. So it's really, just remember, it's a conversation. And the more relaxed you are, everybody in the audience is relaxed too. And then they're learning. Because if I look like I'm not comfortable doing this, it shows. And people, when that happens, the communication really breaks down. Because I'm not talking to them about me and what's going on and how I feel. I've got to be focused on what are they feeling right now, you know, and they're going through this.
How can the CEO make eye contact if they're reading their speech?
First of all, I don't believe in reading speeches. Nobody in the world wants to be read to. We were read to when we were little kids. So what I encourage CEOs to do, unless you've got a teleprompter, which, you know, I don't believe in those either, but if you have a great outline, if you know what you're going to say and you need to know that, talk to people normally. And you can't do that when you're reading. And everybody knows when you're reading to them. I mean, that's the first thing. It's like, really, you're reading to me? I want you to talk to me from the heart about what you want me to know. I don't want you to read it to me like I'm a child. And that's simple, but that's kind of how it is. I don't like it. I encourage people never to read their presentation. And same thing, don't memorize it. If you memorize your presentation, what happens is if you miss something, all of a sudden you're thrown off completely if something goes wrong, you know, because you've left out a section. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start to mess up your whole presentation.
So how might a CEO organize, structure their presentation so that it's easier for them to tell it without memorizing or reading and still connect with the audience?
From my perspective, when I talk to them about this, is what do you want them to feel? You know, I'm all about feelings, because you talk about intention, you know, your whole program is about intention. And the idea is, what's your intention? What do you want them to feel? Because every decision that we make as a human being is based on emotion. And so if you can connect with them emotionally, that changes everything. So that's the one thing I tell them. It's got to be from your heart, what you're talking about. And the subject matter doesn't matter what you're talking about. You can make it a heartfelt presentation. That's important. If you don't do that, you're not making the connection. Here's something. Tell me a fact and I'll believe you. Tell me the truth and I'll trust you. Tell me a story and I will connect with you. That's how it works. And that's why I encourage people here, and I'll give everybody that's watching this an assignment. I do it with all my clients. Sit down and write out 20 stories of your own. We've all got 20 at least, and you've got a lot more. But write down 20 meaningful stories and go through them and make sure that you understand each one of them. And then after you've done that, throw it away. And they're all in your head. And what happens is that when you're giving a presentation, you can grab one of those stories and tell it if it's relevant to what you're talking about. Because the thing about stories is they should be relevant to your conversation. But you've got this whole arsenal of stories that you can actually use. And I believe that stories should be personal. Talk about personal things, about what's happened, or this is something. Let me give you an example. I had a client one time, a CEO client, and this is the strangest one I've ever had. Whenever I begin a program with people, I ask them to tell me something about what something had happened to them when they were a child that they remember. Right? So everybody in the room does this. So I'm in the room, and the CEO, who's 6'4", gets up in front of the room and starts sobbing, literally sobbing. And I'm in the back of the room, and I'm thinking, all right, I got to be careful here. And he was just standing there sobbing. Everybody in the room was just shocked, and they started, like, what's going on? So I stopped him, and I said, look, forget everybody in the room. You're just talking to me now. What's happening to you? And he told me, and this is a shocking story. He said, when you ask me to talk about something that I remember from my childhood, all of a sudden, I remembered something I didn't even know about. I found my mother after she committed suicide. Everybody in the room just fell apart. I mean, can you imagine that? But the story, it was so powerful because he didn't know this. But then all of a sudden, to expose it in front of all of his people, and all of his senior people were there, but everybody just sort of came to his aid in terms of, wow, I mean, for you to open up that much and allow yourself to be that way, talk about become real. That was one of the most real things I've seen in a presentation. So you can do that. And I believe this too. And I tell people this, if you're emotional and all of a sudden you get overcome with emotion and you want to cry, go ahead and cry. Rather see you cry than hold it back. You know, I mean, that makes you real. But and it was a good example of what, when this guy did it, and we became good friends, and we are still friends today. But it was because of that experience, too.
And I can imagine people who are in the room suddenly seeing that CEO in a whole different light.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Completely different light. Like, this is a person that is real. I can relate to what's happened. And all of us have had something happen to us in our lives that is just heartbreaking. And you can talk about those things, but what's so fascinating was that it was just triggered. And watching him cry for 4 minutes, 5 minutes constantly was really something. And everybody just realized what an incredible human being he was to actually open it up like that.
And I can imagine that he would have seemed a lot more approachable after that.
No question. No question. Whenever we're together, we talk about it because it's really helped him in different parts of his life. You know, because he really opens up about things like that. But he made so much progress after that because he was holding that in all the time and never knew about it. So there are many times when you can do this with the CEO of a major corporation. And we had just started our work together. And for some reason, I just decided there's a story that I have that I've never told anyone, never told any human being. And all of a sudden, I just felt I needed to tell him this. And I did. And then turned around and he told me something that was equally emotional. And so that from that point on, our relationship was so solid and so safe. I think the thing was, he became very safe with me and I was very safe with him. There's something to be said about that.
I wonder, you've kind of teased us with that. Is that a story you're willing to share with us now?
My story?
Yes.
Sure. I'll share it with you because I've never done it before, but I will. I mean, I've done it, you know, with him. I have a son, and my son and I were so close. It's unbelievable. I mean, we were like symbiotic. He lived a mile away from me. Anyway, we did everything together. We had a wonderful life together, and that's great. And what happened was we were going to dinner for Thanksgiving, and we were going to some friends, and there was about 20 people there. So I told my son I'll pick him up in the morning. So the night before, I had called him to make sure he knew what time I was going to pick him up and we would go over there. And he didn't answer the phone. in all, George, in all the years I've known my son, he would never not answer the phone if I called him. And it kind of freaked me out. So what happened was I kept calling and I said, if you don't call me, I'm coming over there. And then I fell asleep. And this is a strange thing. I woke up and I knew that he was dead. Don't ask me how. So I got in my car, 90 miles an hour to his place, opened the door, and he had died of a heart attack. And that changed my life forever. And it was just so shocking. And it's something that I don't share with people because sometimes, and I had this conversation with people, is it sometimes people don't know how to react to that kind of story. You know, because imagine losing a child, and that is the worst thing that a human being could do, would be to lose their child. And it's because it's unnatural. You're not supposed to, you know, lose your kids and outlive them. But that was my experience. And I shared that with him. And then he turned around and told me a story about how one of his kids died. And so that, once you have that bond, you know, to do that, and it, even now telling this story, for me, I've gotten to the point where I don't cry as much. But there were times when I couldn't tell it because it was so emotional for me. But I'm at a point now where I can tell you. I mean, it's been 10 years, so I can at least discuss it.
Wow. And
yeah,
that's powerful. That's that's a story that most of us hope we never have to
never
tell.
Never have to go through it. I always tell people that that's the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Wow.
So.
Well, thank you for sharing, Tim. And
absolutely. No, I'm glad I was able to, because normally I can't get through that story, but I got through it. So
and you mentioned earlier to write down 20 stories from your life. How do you find those stories? What are you looking for?
Well, what I would say, what are you looking for if you're doing the stories? Look for stories that are personal to you, but they have a relevant message to, if you're talking about something. There's got to be some relevance there. Like the story that I told you about the guy, the CEO that broke down and cried during the whole thing, that's very relevant to presenting, because here you are, the CEO's up in front of the room, and you don't expect him to start crying. Those things kind of, they happen. And there are things that happen in life that we can share. As I listen to people, because when I'm doing a seminar, each person does about 6 presentations. And I get to know them on such a personal level because they talk about things that are personal to them and how they relate to the audience too. So if it's relatable, use it. Use the stories that are relatable. You can use funny stories too. There's a lot of fun stories. I believe that humor is great in any presentation, but here's one thing, a rule that I have, don't tell a joke. Because if you tell a joke, it'll fall flat. Use humor and make it organic. What I find is if I'm talking about something, all of a sudden something will occur to me and it's funny and I'll talk about it because it's in the moment, but I never pull out anything that's not in the moment. So that's part of that. But pick stories like that, that are humorous as well, but not a joke. They're much more, this is a situation that happened to me and that's fine. But I think situational things and personal things are really important.
And I'm reminded of a personal incident that is funny now. It wasn't at the time. It was when I started a new job. My boss took me to lunch the first week, and he ordered steak for lunch. And so I asked for the same, figuring, you know, it builds rapport. It's strange choice for lunch, but okay. I wondered why the waiter didn't ask us how we wanted our steak. Mm-hmm. It turns out it was steak tartare.
Okay.
I had never heard of steak tartare, and I like my steak medium well.
Well, that's absurd. Okay. How did you like the steak tartare?
I didn't like it. I picked at it. I looked at it with, I was shocked when it arrived.
Fascinating. I don't know. That's a good story, though. The idea that all of a sudden you get something you've never seen before, and here's somebody who likes the medium well, and it's raw. I mean, I'm with you on that one. So
those embarrassing moments, those mm-hmm. learning moments,
right?
Those funny moments, funny now moments, maybe mm-hmm. not funny at the time.
Looking back, and they can be different, funny, amusing, anything like that. So pick those kinds of stories, because if you're talking, like one of the things I love about your show and what you do is you talk about intention. And I'm all about intention. When I start any program, I tell people, look, there's content. You know, you have content. I don't care about your content. What's your intention? move me, to say something to me, however it is. And I show them something. I'll take a ball, literally, and I do. I have a tennis ball. And I'll just pick it up, and I will throw it to somebody in the room. And I don't say anything. I just kind of throw it. I'm not even looking at the person. It kind of flies over there. They catch it or they don't. Then I'll turn around and say to that person, I want you to take that. Now you've got the ball. Throw it to the person across from you. Okay? So they take the ball and throw it to the person across. That's it. That's my instruction. Then I changed it. I said, I want you to throw the ball to the person across from you, but I want them to catch it. Okay? So the intention's changing. Then, and that goes back and forth, and that's fine. Then I said, listen to me. Listen to me very carefully. I want you to throw that ball to the person across from you, but your life depends on whether or not they catch it. Now, you talk about intention. It's fun to watch. People, they'll either get up, walk over, hand it to them, or they'll throw it over their head, depending on their relationship. But it's interesting to see how people treat that, but they take it seriously. And I wasn't kidding. I said, your life depends on whether or not they get it. But it's all about intention. You know, what I intended in the first place is I didn't care. I just threw the ball over there. My second one, I'm getting more and more intentional about what it is. Make sure you catch the ball. But the third one had consequences. And that intention is much more powerful. When you have that kind of intention that I'm going to make you understand me or make you do something that makes you think or feel, that's my intention when I'm giving a presentation. My intention is not to get it over with, and that's a lot of people have that, is to go in there and move you or change you or let you feel something that you have not felt before and share things that I know. So that's my intention. So intention is critical to whatever you do. Content is content. That's all it is. Because you can take any content you want, but if it's not intentional, it's not going to work. So that's my thing about intention. And that's why I love your podcast, because I've seen people do this. So,
in preparing to deliver a presentation, does the speaker start with clarifying their intention?
I don't know. I wouldn't say I'd start with clarifying my intention, but what I would do, the first thing you have to do is start with, how do you get their attention in the first place? You know, what I believe in using what are called super facts. For example, what I would say to you, are you aware of the fact? If I'm talking to the audience about this, about presentations, I'll say, are you aware of the fact, everybody, that in the United States, we do 850 PowerPoint presentations per second? That's 22 million per day, and it's 9 billion per year. Do you think we're hooked on PowerPoint? And now I get into my whole discussion about PowerPoint. But I need to get them their mind going and thinking, and I tell all my clients, there's super facts about everything. You want to know what they are? Google them. But if you do something like that, it really gets people thinking, you know, about that whole thing. So then I use that to get into the presentation, but it's all very intentional to get people involved in that. So that's kind of how I use it. But intentionally, when I'm talking to people, I want to make sure that they understand what I'm saying, but also I can tell. I'm big on reading the audience. I can read people, you know, I can read what they're saying, what they're thinking in their head, how they move, whatever they do. All those things are there. And if you read the audience, you can modify your presentation as you're doing it because you want to make sure that you're connecting. And that's the most important thing is the connection. And that's emotional. Number one fear of all human beings, public speaking, flat out. Number three is death. And public speaking beats death by a landslide. So we're talking about presentations or public speaking, the most fearful thing in the world. So you have to, that's my intention always, is to make people feel good about what they're doing. You know, if you feel good about giving a presentation and you realize that it's not about you, it's about your audience. And if you can get to the point where you want to make your audience feel something and you want them to really understand what you're talking about, that's powerful. So that's my thing with that.
Mm. Tim, if people want to find out more about your coaching and your training programs, the place for that is?
Place for that would be my website. Yeah, on the website, I have a lot of that information there. And also, I'm happy to talk to anybody about it because everything is custom. Everything I do is customized. When I work with a company, I get to know the people first, and then I will customize the program to their needs. And that's important. So that's part of the thing that I do for presentations. But as far as coaching is concerned, which is my second love, I love presentations, but I also love doing coaching. The coaching part of it is I have a particular style of coaching, and it has to be something where people have, I have to resonate with them and they have to resonate with me. I've never had a situation where I shouldn't say that. One time I said to somebody, I'm sorry, we can't work together because you're not coachable. And I meant it. I mean, some people are not coachable. And when you find that, then you go there. But I've been fortunate. 99% of the people that I work with are extremely coachable. And I've had people literally, I have one client that's been with me for 14 years. And I said to him one day, I said, you're becoming like a dependent child with me. You know, I mean, I'm there for you all at all times. And what a wonderful thing to have a client for 14 years who you're coaching, you know, and it's great. But, you know, things like that happen.
Mm. And the website is leadingceo.com, and you can find the link in the description below. Tim, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could meet with a CEO and they're going to be speaking at the annual National Corporate Conference next month,
right?
What one, two, or three pieces of advice might you give to them?
First thing, stay present. And I have a motto, stay present and be real. If you can do those things, you've got most of it done. But stay present and stay in the moment, because what happens to us, and I'm going to give you some information here. We think at 600 words per minute. Human beings think it's 600 words per minute. We speak at 150. But what's happening is the whole time you're presenting, you're talking to yourself at 600 words per minute. What are you saying? Are you saying this is the greatest presentation I've ever done? That's what you should be saying. But no, what happens is you go, I can't believe I just said that. And then what am I going to say next? We kind of bounce back and forth. So that's when I get people, stay in the moment. Don't worry about what you just said. You should be your own cheerleader. I really encourage any CEO to do that. Be your own cheerleader when you're talking. Think about in your mind how great this is. And you know what's going to happen? It'll be great. Because you're that whole thing, you emulate that kind of feeling. So watch your words. Self-talk is more important than anything else you say. What you're saying to yourself. That's a lot of words, 600 words per minute that you're talking to yourself. So I would give them that advice. Stay present, be real, watch your self-talk, and conversation. Make it a conversation. If you're doing a presentation, you're talking at me. If you're doing a conversation, you're talking with me. So make it a conversation. And those are the things I would say to any CEO in any presentation.
Mm. My guest today is Tim Hart. And if there's one message that should linger with you, it's make it a conversation.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.